True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin, precious metals, broker-dealer depository service, always actively involved in buying and selling all forms of precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, coins, collections, estates, doing building investment portfolios, helping people secure and protect their financial assets. We like to do it from what we consider to be a very clearly spelled out conservative and biblical manner. You know, things come and things go. I think we all know that. What goes up must come down, you know, all that stuff. What goes around comes around. And really the bottom line is and has been and I think always will be that the absolutes that God set in place for our finances, which is really asset-based, will always prevail. We're sitting in a very unique time right now. Trump passed his tax plan, which they're very, very stoked about. And it's, you know, I think it's the first major tax overhaul, they say, in 37 or 34 years. The thing about it is, it isn't exactly what they wanted, but it's too much of what they wanted in some ways and not enough in another. In others. One thing that concerns me is imbalance a little bit. They definitely are cutting the taxes of the big C corps. The C corporations are typically shareholder held companies with stock distribution and dividends and things like that. And they are getting a very nice tax cut. C corps typically have had to pay a double tax, where they pay a tax on their income, and then when it's distributed to the shareholder, then they have to pay tax again, which is very unjust. The tax rate's absurd. The left has just been brutal, and you know, despite that, we've still seen influxes of overseas money into our country to a degree, but not a lot. And it's so overdue and so necessary. And I guess, you know, politics, politics, politics. It's funny because people say, well, what's the name of your show? Or, you know, where is it at? Or what's it on? And I tell them it's True Wealth. And it started out being about money. And now it's about politics, religion, and economics. And they're like, wow, that's a big swing. I'm like, not really. They're all intertwined. We have all these economic activities that Trump is trying to accomplish. And I mean, folks, the political obstruction is sad. And what it reminds me of is the Clinton or the Bush administration. He got in and he's like, George W. Bush, this is, I'm going to be a uniter. You know, I'm going to bring the two aisles. I'm going to bring us together in the aisles type of thing and reach across the aisle and we're going to work together. And after one term, he was so sick and so disgusted with this left-wing, socialist, angry, hostile, you know, volatile, vitriolic trash, you know, and then just this destructive spirit. And I was talking to an accountant yesterday about the Trump plan. And he was saying that he has clients that were literally unloading on him about the Trump tax plan just because it's a Trump tax plan. They haven't read it. They don't know what it does. They don't care what it does. It's the Trump tax plan. And by golly, they want to ruin it. They want to destroy it. They want to destroy Trump. Folks, that spirit, I don't care who you are, and I know I get listeners from both sides on the show, that spirit destroys our nation. And no, Trump isn't destroying the nation. And if you're listening to MSNBC, it's foul filth, lies, trash. And people say, well, it's no worse than Fox News. Fox News will give you balance. They will always have somebody on to argue the counterpoint. And then they say, well, yeah, but they won't let them talk or whatever. They let them talk. And even if they didn't, you can still hear what they're saying. You get on the MSNBCs and now the CNN. CNN has these panels of seven people. They'll get one conservative, put them clear on the end, and absolutely hammer the hound out of them. They pound the tar out of these people. They don't want truth. And you know, like I mentioned on Monday, even the Pope came out and said fake news is a sin. I mean, folks, these people have lost their marbles. These journalists, they've lost their cookies, if you will, their brains, their whatever you want to call it. They're so far out in left field, and they're so stinking biased and so unreasonable. This is wrong. I got an article here I dug up. I had absolutely no intention of covering this today. Here's the headline. It's from Business Insider. Journalists drink too much, are bad at managing emotions, and operate at a lower level than average, according to a new study. And then it goes on, and did you hear me? Journalists drink too much, they're bad at managing their emotions, and they operate at a lower level than average, according to a new study. What does this mean? This means that those protected by our First Amendment with free speech, the right of the press, free access of the press, to communicate to the general public of the American populace of what's going on in this nation are incompetent and mentally ill and deficient, okay? Journalists' brains, the article says, show a lower than average level of executive functioning. And you say, what's executive functioning? Executive functioning is the ability to make logical, common sense, everyday type decisions in their normal activities, okay? You're in the parking garage, someone kind of cuts you off. Executive functioning says, I'm an adult, I'm going to move on. Poor executive functioning means you get out of your car, you start screaming at people, you lose control of yourself. It means you cut in line at the cafeteria. That's what poor executive functioning is. Poor executive functioning means you don't manage your time well. Poor executive functioning, you know, it means you don't make wise life choices. Executive functioning is just that. It's executive. It's upper end. It's higher level comprehension and behavior choices. So the study goes on. Journalist brains show a lower than average level of executive functioning, according to new study, which means they have a below average ability to regulate their emotions, suppress biases, solve complex problems, switch between tasks, and show creative and flexible thinking. The study, led by Tara Swart, a neuroscientist and leadership coach, analyzed 40 journalists from newspapers, magazines, broadcast, and online platforms over 7 months. The participants took part in tests related to their lifestyle, health, and behavior. It was launched in association with the London Press Club, and the objective was to determine how journalists can thrive under stress. It's not yet peer-reviewed, and the sample size is small, so the results should not be taken necessarily as fact, it says. Let me tell you something. As far as journalists go, I don't know what the population they make up is, but I'm sure it's about one out of, you know, what, 1,000, right? And so if you have 40 journalists, and that's, you know, so that represents 40,000 people. Or if it's one out of 10,000, it represents 400,000 people. With my background, including a bachelor's science degree in mathematics and statistics, which is statistics for studies and calculating probability of outcome, that is a fair sample group. You're not going to get a larger sample than 40 of something that's ultimately so rare. That's a very, very good sample. So that when they say it's a small sample group, I mean, how many journalists are you going to get to participate in this stuff? Where you got to watch is when they say it hasn't been peer reviewed. Well, what does that mean? I mean, that means other journalists haven't been given the opportunity to shred the study and take it apart and criticize it and say where it's wrong. Well, of all the people in the world that would shred it and take it apart and say it's wrong, journalists are the ones that would do it. So we're not going to hold our breath for that, I don't think. And so it goes on, each subject completed a blood test, wore a heart rate monitor for 3 days, kept a food and drink diary for a week, and completed a brain profile questionnaire. And then it goes on and explains all the details of that. The results showed that journalists' brains were operating at a lower level than the average population, particularly because, I like this, particularly and or possibly particularly because of dehydration and the tendency of journalists to self-medicate with alcohol, caffeine, and high sugar foods. Well, if that were the case, if it was dehydration, and if it was due to self-medicating, obviously that would fall back under the poor executive functioning, would it not? It all kind of goes full circle here. So the study continues on. 41% of the subjects said they drank 18 or more units of alcohol a week, which is 4 units above the recommended weekly allowance. Like, less than 5% drank the recommended amount of water. However, in interviews conducted in... Now, you know, when they say less than 5% drank the recommended amount of water, folks, most of us don't drink the recommended amount of water. As a side note, we should be drinking a minimum of like 8 12-ounce glasses a day. We need it. It's the lubricant that keeps the body flowing. And as you get older, you dehydrate quicker, and you definitely need a lot of fluid. Fluid helps with everything. It's so good for you, and it prevents disease. It helps your body function properly. It keeps you detoxified. It just keeps everything running. It makes your body run a lot smoother and a lot easier. When you think of how magnificent the human body is, the fact that it goes for 70 years with the heart that never stops and, you know, and it just keeps processing things. What a miracle. What a miracle. It says, in interviews conducted in conjunction with the brain profile results, the participants indicated they felt their jobs had a lot of meaning and purpose, and they showed high mental resilience. Swartz suggested this gave them an advantage over people in other professions in dealing with the work pressure or of tight deadlines. It says they scored low on executive. So to try to counterbalance the study of journalists, remember the headline, let's not forget, journalists drink too much or bad at managing emotions and operate at a lower level than average, according to a new study. So it says they scored pretty high. I like this. It didn't say real high. It just said pretty high on, in other words, probably average. Abstraction, the ability to deal with ideas rather than events. It's related to the part of the brain where the most sophisticated problem solving takes place. In other words, it highlights the ability to think outside the box and make connections where others might not see them. That's dangerous. That's not good, okay? It says they score pretty high on the ability to deal with ideas rather than events. If you are being fed information by a journalist, do you want their ideas or do you want the facts of an event? I think you want the facts of an event. The way journalism should work in the perfect world is they report, you decide. Political bias has gotten so extremely radically out of line that you don't even know what in the world you're looking at or talking about. I mean, you just don't even know what you're being fed anymore. And if you don't know that, please wake up, because you are being fed lie upon lie upon lie. People think, especially on the left, that Trump blurts out fake news as a distraction. Wake up, folks. If someone can stand there and say fake news, fake news, fake news, and the news agency doesn't defend the story, but says, hey, you quit picking on us. We're the free press. Trump is trying to dumb down the free press. He's trying to nullify the First Amendment. Wait a minute. Let's get back to the facts. If a story's fake news, it's fake news, right? And if they're not defending it, which they don't, then people need to wake up and say, maybe I am being lied to. And I mean, this you know, term that's come out, snowflake, okay? You know, they're calling the millennial generation the snowflake. And of course, now we're finding that that term hurts their feelings and they find it very offensive. Well, the term snowflake refers to the fact that people have their feelings hurt easily and are easily offended. So it's not a shocker that being called a snowflake makes them act like a snowflake. The reason that they're called snowflakes is because every snowflake is unique. No two are alike. But snowflakes melt under any kind of pressure. They don't last under any kind of duress, any kind of anything. They fall apart. And so we are dealing with snowflakes. That is a terrific term for this new generation. And this new generation is the one that's feeding us information. When they go to school to learn how to be journalists, they are not learning the difference between opinion and fact. They are learning that a journalist is hired for their opinion, to persuade or, you know, bend or add bias to stories, which is terrifying, frankly. I mean, let's be honest. How can you, as an American citizen, make the best decisions for the nation as a group? Because it is, after all, a country by the people, for the people, of the people, right? How can you make the best decisions in this nation or perceive things properly if you're being lied to or being fed fake news? You can't, okay? So here's another area they say journalists, quote, scored pretty high on. Remember, it was abstraction. First was the ability to deal with ideas rather than facts. I mean, come on. Ideas rather than facts. I'm sorry, folks. Like, that's a high score. That's not something they scored high on. That's something that they, you know, it's saying, like, you scored high on being bad at math, okay? They scored really high on being a bad parent. And the next one is what they call value tagging. The ability to assign values to different sensory cues, such as whether something is a priority or has meaning. Scoring highly in this area indicates a good ability to sift through information and pick out what's important. Important to who? Important to them. The ability to assign values, okay, whose values? Their values. To different sensory cues. Whose sensory cues? Their sensory cues. So they're able to show extreme bias and over-enunciate and over-emphasize things that are perceived improperly by their biased perspective of reality. That's not a strength. This is basically showing us, folks, they can't find anything good to say about professional journalists. Fact. Now, here's what they say they scored lower on. Lower. Not low, but lower. The high was pretty high, and the traits were pretty bad. Now we're going to look at the traits they scored lower on. Not low, but just lower. Lower than what? I don't know. First, it was executive function, which we discussed earlier. It says, as well as the traits mentioned above, low scores for executive function also suggest poor sleep, poor nutrition, poor exercise, and poor mindfulness. In other words, their attention to detail, their environmental awareness, what I call peripheral perception, the ability to understand what's going on around you, they're very weak. And it said that they have, you know, it goes on and talks about them saying that they don't have time for breaks because they work so hard, right? Journalists scored lower on silencing the mind, which is related to the ability to have thoughts without getting distracted by them, or a powerful ability to focus. Low scores indicate the opposite, suggesting journalists have a hard time preventing themselves from worrying about the future or regretting the past. What is that? Oh, global warming. Oh, we better worry about the future. It says they can't silence their mind, which is related to the ability to have thoughts without getting distracted by them. Emotional response. I can't control myself. What is the final and most important fruit of the Spirit? Self-control. You've probably all seen it. I know years back in a study, 96% of journalists considered themselves like very radically liberal. I don't know if that was the terminology, but we'll just say extremely liberal. 96%. Is that balanced? No, it's godless. It's very simple. When you deal with what's going on in our world today, in our country, lefties are socialists, the conservatives are biblical. That's the way it works. Socialism is run and controlled by man. Conservatism is run and controlled by God, period. That's the whole premise. That's the whole gist of it all. Everything builds upon that. So, of course, they can't calm their mind. What does the Bible say? Be anxious about nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. And then it says that he will give you the peace that passes all understanding, right? If you don't know God and you're relying on man and secularism, you're going to be miserable. That's the problem with the spiritual battle, though, folks. When the real spiritual battle takes place with the human secularists, they're miserable. They're anxious. They're focusing their concerns on unconcernable issues. When people are miserable and they lack peace, they need something to focus on. I can tell you that I am a very preoccupied businessman. You could say a workaholic. I would say that I have to stay on top of the machine. And I will admit that there are things and times that really occupy my mind. Unresolved conflict, unresolved issues, those things, problem solving, things like that. I don't stop thinking about them until they are corrected. In this case, they are focusing on things they can do nothing about. Global warming is the scandal of the century. It's one thing after the next. Thanks to Al Gore, the first green billionaire. So they worry about global warming. They worry about, the planet, Mother Earth, Gaia. I love it when I tried to watch some movie the other night, and I can't remember what it was, but all of a sudden it just turned to trash. They were praying to the universe, and the universe heard a cry from a girl, and the universe answered. And it's not the universe, folks. It's God's creation. God is God is God is God. Why would you want to put your faith in the universe? I mean, let's be frank. What percentage of the universe is hostile towards you biologically? How about 99.999999999999, and I could do that for the next 3 weeks and not get there, percent? 1 times 10 to the 80 billionth power is hostile towards you. Everything in the universe would kill you in a second. You can't breathe. It's too cold. It's too hot. It's too far away. It's, there's no food. There's no vegetation. There's no life that we know of. And folks, come on, right? And this is the foundation of the displeasure, the dystopia, if you will, of these journalists. They see the world in a dystopian fashion, okay? That means dark and twisted and wrong and bad. And these are the people that are feeding us information, okay? Truth, seek the truth no matter the cost. That's what I always say. If you're getting information, get it from wise sources. If you have friends or neighbors being fed this rubbish, one thing I guess that's kind of hard is, I got some garbage in the mail, and I just, this white supremacist filth that people twist and turn the Bible to turn it into this racial rubbish, not a fan, folks. You know, people send this stuff, no return address, no email, no. But I did spend some time reviewing it. Why? Because I want to know the truth. I want to know the truth. If it's wrong, I want to know enough to refute it. If it's right, I want to know. Now, you might say, what are you talking about, Kevin? You just said it's rubbish. Of course it is. But I will entertain things until I determine they're not intellectually sound. Okay? My point is this. If you are seeking the truth, you will entertain different things. People on the left aren't seeking the truth. They want to shut it down. They want to call it hate speech. They want to go to speakers that come to UC Berkeley and shout them down and scream over the top and block them and object them and censor them. These folks are not searching for truth. This is terrifying. You know, there's the book George Orwell's 1984, which, in my opinion, predicted all this. It was a blueprint commissioned by the Fabian Society, along with Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World, of the direction that we were going with this world, nation, country, whatever you want to call it, according to the Fabianists, which basically see a very godless, dire outcome down the road. And this is so much where we're heading right now. I mean, it is such a controlling thing. And, you know, I was listening on the radio today where they're like, you know, how do we prevent the next terrorist attack? Well, what we need to do is start by remodeling all of the airports and basically install body scanners all throughout the airport, and bus stations and wherever you go. We need body scanners everywhere so that everybody, this is like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Minority Report. It's one of my favorites with Tom Cruise. It's older. It's probably early 2000s. Love it. But it's sort of that concept where they're scanning everybody's retina. And when you walk through the mall, they advertise to you from a retinal scan. This is what they're talking about to help things get better. Then they get into the, if you see something, say something. Okay, well, I agree, within reason. But here's the problem. If you see a Muslim acting funny and you say something and you're wrong, you are going to be labeled a racist. I don't care what you think. That's what they're going to call you. It's a fact. And so whenever something bad happens, a terrorist attack or whatever, they always come back and say, how could we have prevented this? And then they go back and they piece together the person's life and say, hey, look at this. No one said a word. Well, folks, after the fact, it's so easy to go back and criticize the way somebody handled things. But it's so hard to see a loose bit of evidence and have it investigated and end up looking like a fool. And frankly, the people that would be doing most of the tattling are probably not going to be perceiving things properly anyway. Once, years back, I was in an airport and I was sleeping barely, as well as you can sleep in an airport, while I waited for my flight. I was on the end chair, end seat of a row of seats, and I had my bag not only next to me on the end of the seat, but wrapped over the back, hanging by a strap. I dozed off for maybe 10 minutes at the max, woke up, looked over, my bag's gone. I freaked. Where's my bag? I'm running around. This gal, who I will say looked relatively evil, no, she didn't even respond. Somebody else said, hey, that gal there took your bag and turned it into TSA. And I'm like, what? And I said, and I went over, I said, you did that? And she goes, well, it was unattended. I said, how is it unattended when it's hanging on the end of the chair that I'm resting on? And she said, well, it wasn't on your lap or whatever, like it's my purse. So I began running through the airport, trying to chase this guy down who ended up with the bag. And luckily I chased him and I found him just as he was going in a door. And, you know, through a series of great events, I was able to recover my bag. But this gal upon a short conversation after that was what? A radical, flaming, hate-filled lefty. She really was. I'm not exaggerating. She was extremely hostile, extremely mean, and extremely paranoid. And it's just unrealistic. Like, you're going to see me. I don't fit the profile, sitting there with a nice leather Tumi bag, you know, hanging over. It just doesn't fit. None of it fits. And this is the problem with the see something, say something, is you get such a barrage of reports that they have to sift through that they can't possibly ever get to them all. This has happened over and over with people, the Sarnoff brothers and other people that have pulled off stunts. As they look back, they see the reports. They see that the FBI was aware of them. But then what? Right? So then what do? We start to become the thought police. We start to try to prevent things. And then our law enforcement agencies become so terrified of failing that they begin to abuse the civil rights of citizen after citizen after citizen, unless, of course, they're an illegal immigrant, and then they have special rights on a higher plane than you or I, the builders, the foundational citizens of this nation. But that's the problem, folks. I'll tell you one thing I've really pondered a lot. You know, Abraham Lincoln said, better 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be incarcerated. I can tell you that I have said that in front of a number of people and had them say, oh, that's ridiculous. It's not worth it. I've had multiple people tell me it's better that we incarcerate innocent people in order to get the guilty than to take the risk of letting the guilty go free. This is the mindset of those who have never, ever been under the pressure that comes from a country like Nazi Germany. People who don't understand what it's like when they come for you. He was a Lutheran pastor maybe in Nazi Germany. Who said, you know, first they came for them and then they came for me. What was his name? Martin Niemöller, I think. And essentially what he says was this, and this is something to think about, folks, because they train us more and more to let government do their duty, right? So he basically said, after Nazi Germany said, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Think about that, folks. We have got to unite towards what's right. And when this nation is being separated and divided from within, from the harshest, most destructive political angles, and, you know, we literally have entered a time, an arena, that we are under a level of attack we do not comprehend. You can go back to the Clinton era, okay? Clinton was a schmoozer. He was a politician. I used to watch him speak, and trust me, I was nowhere near left side on anything. And I would listen to him speak, and I'd go, man, that guy's good. He would make me like him. He had charisma. He was good. He was a schmoozer. He spoke left, legislated center. He brought to the center, not saying he was a great president. I know about his cheating and perjury and all that. And by the way, yeah, I won't even get into that. You know, his sexual activity in the White House was terrible and wrong, and he should have stepped down and all that. But I don't know. That investigation got a tad out of hand. We can kind of see the product of it right now with the Mueller investigation. absolutely out of hand. So we go from Clinton and we go to Bush. And then with Bush, we get a pretty straight shooter. You get the Michael Moores of the world. They make movies that mock and bemoan and besmirch and belittle our president, and it's disgusting. It is the president of the United States. And when I talked about yesterday, I was speaking to an accountant, and they were saying that they've talked to clients who are like, I want Trump destroyed. I hate his guts. And he's like, man, this is really bad. Don't you care about the country? And they said to him, well, you used to hate Obama. And like he and I agreed, and he said, I never hated Obama. I fundamentally disagreed with his policies, but you don't hate him. What does Jesus say? Pray for your enemies. Do good to your enemies, and you'll heap coals on their head, and etc. I mean, this is the spirit of Jesus Christ. If one of you out there is dealing with hatred to the point where you literally can't forgive and you hate somebody, you hate them, you need to drop to your knees and give it up. You need to trust God. God can cleanse that. I went through that many years ago in a personal situation where someone did something very, very, very bad to me that cut to the core about as deep as possible. And I just was so angry. I didn't hate the person, but I was obsessed with frustration. I couldn't get it out of my head. Turned it over to God, prayed, Lord, I know that only you can provide forgiveness. I know that it's only through a miracle that you can do it. And literally at a different time, I was sitting in a computer, and I literally felt like his anointing come over me like water through my body. And when it was finished, I heard, there, now you have forgiven. And I was like, wow, I have. So I actually tried to conjure up the feelings of rage and anger towards that person again, just to test it. And I could not. I began to see that person through the eyes of God. And we've got to understand that that's what God sees. He sees broken spirits. He sees hurt, you know, whatever you want to call it, egos, pride. Pride's bad, I get it. But he sees us hurt on the inside. He sees the damage that leads to our misappropriate behavior. And so I, like I said, I tried to conjure it back up. It wouldn't come back. And I learned something about forgiveness. I learned that I could give it, that you just let it go. You've got to see through God's eyes what he sees in these situations. You also have to realize, folks, when you look at David and Goliath, okay, and here I go on my little tangents, right? When you look at David and Goliath, Goliath was put there to elevate David, okay? Without Goliath, we would not have a David. What is a Goliath? A Goliath is an undefeatable giant. It's too big to do on our own. David cried out to God. David went to and took the claim of God and said, basically, my God is bigger than you. And, you know, I've got the power and the strength of God, and I will take you out, etc. We have got to have a Goliath in order for God to elevate and escalate us to the position he wants us to be. You cannot be exalted, uplifted, edified, whatever you want to call it, without overcoming a Goliath, okay? So when we see bad things coming, hard things coming, people on the attack, people criticizing our character and whatever you want to call it, when we see this going on, this is why God says, count it all joy, my brethren, when you endure or suffer certain trials and tribulations, etc. And then it goes on, and it talks, you know, throughout the Bible about God using these times for those he loves to elevate us. It says he disciplines, which is an interesting translation. He conditions, we should say. He physically conditions, spiritually conditions, trains, rigorously trains is a better phrase, those he loves. He, you know, vehemently challenges those he loves. He puts us through the ringer. Why? Because that's how you get tough. That's how you get strong. And that is how you achieve victory. You cannot achieve victory without severe challenges in your life. Am I right? I mean, when we want everything to be perfect and, you know, folks, avoid the lie that a hard day is a bad day. A day filled with chaos or even catastrophe is a bad day. Wrong. That's a day when God's working on you, working in your life, giving you the opportunity to grow. If you're working in a workplace where you're taking a ton of flack, people are disrespectful, it's very difficult because you're peers. But you need to realize and think, you are a child of the living God. Have you ever seen the movie Undercover Boss? That's where the boss of or a CEO of a corporation goes down and works with the frontline people to see how things are really going and get a taste of what they go through on a daily basis. Some really amazing outcomes happen from that show when he walks in, when they walk in their shoes. The thing you got to understand, though, one thing you'll always notice, when that undercover boss is there, even if the people that are supposed to be his peers are kind of abusive to him, disrespectful to him, brushing him off, treating him rudely, they usually roll with it pretty well. Doesn't bother him too bad. Why? Because they know on the inside they have a higher calling. They know that they have a higher status in life. As a believer in Christ, you're a child of the living God. You technically are royalty. You will share in the inheritance for eternity with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. If you realize that when you're confronted by others, and I'm not talking about arrogance or contempt, folks, do not address other people with arrogance or contempt ever. Address them with a spirit of love. This is how we are to be ambassadors for Christ. If you know that you are a child of the living God and you represent him as the child of the King, just because people that aren't children of the King behave improperly does not mean that you need to engage. You don't need to get the last word. You don't need to get even. You let God sift it out and sort it out. This is, you know, you keep your eyes on God, just like when Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water. As long as he looked at Christ, he did fine. When he started to look down, he sank. And how many times do we all do it where we overthink things? You start, things are going good. You're looking towards God and you start to sink. And I'll tell you, well, I'm saying when you look away from God. And I had another situation here recently where we had a certain circumstance in our family where God gave me a very clear leading. He gave me a prophetic foreword that I passed on to the person before they went into a certain meeting or situation. And the prophetic leading that God gave me was so accurate and so true and so impossible to have come up otherwise. It gave us an incredible upper hand in this situation. Well, after the fact, I started to get worried because we had God on our side, and it led us to prevail very well in this situation. And I started to worry later, man, boy, I think, what if that other person, you know, gets really flustered or tries to get revenge because we were so effective in this situation or whatever. And I thought, and I told my wife, I said, I can't do this. God literally gave me that forewarning. He led me, he took care of it, he stepped up, And then and he proved himself so true. And then I start to worry that maybe the ramifications of having God on my side leading me to victory might make the enemy more angry. I don't think we need to think that way at all. So I was briefly touching earlier on forgiveness. Folks, you cannot carry around or harbor bitterness and anger. You can't do it. You can be frustrated with people. You can be accurate in your description, and you should be very accurate in your perception. I've had, you know, plenty of experiences in life with, our business is very rigorous and demanding, and trying to find people to fit the slots, you get all kinds. You get people that want to come and tell you how they're going to do things. You get people that just cannot intellectually comprehend things. It's just, you get all kinds, but you've just got to stick to that standard. I've learned over time that you've just got to hold that bar where it belongs. If you begin to adapt to the weak links, and you be, you know, it's better to bring people up to the standard than to lower the standard down to people. And it's a huge spiritual component as believers, the parable of talents and everything. And I won't necessarily get into that too deep right now. Couple other things, you know, Trump's tax plan, folks, he's got the individual mandate abolished now, so people don't have to have insurance. We could be potentially walking into a decent time in this country. Economically, I think it's a little bit concerning because the stock market has roared and roared and roared and rallied based on the presumption that this tax plan was going to pass. Okay. So the problem with the tax or with the stock market is it's all presumptuous. It's all speculatively presumptuous. It's all based on the news and what they think's going to happen. Now that it's through, we'll see. My one concern with it, and not that I haven't really clarified in my mind if it's going to make it better or worse, but ultimately, the number one concern that I have is inflation. Okay, and when Rand Paul came before the presidential campaign, and I was fortunate enough to be in a very, very small, very small group with him in a private area. He made the comment, we were talking about taxes and taxation, the fact that direct taxes, income taxes are forbidden by our Constitution, period. And somebody made the comment that their spending is so extreme now they need the taxes. Rand Paul's comment was that if we stopped all income taxes today, which was a couple years ago, it would only take our government back to the size it was in 2003. So what's happened is under Obama, we so exponentially exploded the size of our government to consume such massive amounts. Folks, I assure you that he had a death wish for this nation. If he did not, and if he believed that his ideology was truly a practical plan, then he is so naively ignorant, which I also believe he is. You talk about arrogance and contempt. Boy, I've seen it come out of Obama to half of America. You've got Hillary out there trash talking on Trump, never stopping. She's still on her book tour. What happened? What happened, Hillary? Like I said in the past, is you happened. This Russia collusion, you got Mueller, you got all these things coming apart at the seams. You've got severe bias from the FBI. You've got emails and texts that are basically saying, we need this as an insurance